Safety FM, changing safety cultures one broadcast and one podcast at a time.
SafetyFM.com with Jay Allen. Changing safety cultures one broadcast and one podcast at a time.
Welcome to Safety FM, where we talk about safety that's truly inspired by you. Hello and welcome to Safety FM. This episode of the broadcast and the podcast has been brought to you by Safety Focus Moment. There are consultants that want to help you get to the safety culture that you've been looking for. For more information, go to safetyfocusmoment.com. Hello and welcome to Safety FM. This is Jay Allen. On today's episode, we have Kevin Rindel from Vimocity. Now, Vimocity is a very interesting company because what they do is something slightly different than most. What they want to assist your company with is workplace injury prevention. So I'm going to have Kevin jump right in on this episode of Safety FM.
We are changing safety cultures, one broadcast and one podcast at a time. SafetyFM.com.
Hello and welcome to Safety FM. I have Kevin Rindel from Vimocity on the phone, and how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jay. Thanks so much for the opportunity. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. I appreciate you coming on. I have to tell you, we've kind of went back and forth, you and some of your partners, and we were trying to figure out a time that we could get you on, so we have you on, and I don't understand how I'm going to be able to explain this perfectly. This is what I'm going to say, and then you can kind of steal it from here. You're not a company that focuses per se on safety, but you're a company that focuses on alleviating pain in a work environment. So how could you describe that to our audience?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a different approach to injury prevention. I'll give you a little bit of background on my experience. So I've been practicing as a sports medicine practitioner. My training is as a chiropractor for the last going on 13 years. The last 9 years I've spent working with elite and professional athletes, specifically the U.S. swim team is one of the organizations that I've worked with, done a lot of work with the U.S. Olympic Committee and other professional and elite level organizations, and love working with those athletes. A huge part of what I focus on is the preventative side of injuries when it comes to that group, and we know that when athletes stay healthy, they can train better, they recover better, and they can perform better. And so a lot of the work that I've done with that group in particular has been related to what we call soft tissue mobilization or treatment to muscles, tendons, ligaments, all of those soft tissues. We know that biomechanics, or the way somebody moves, their range of motion, is highly influenced by the health of their soft tissues. And we also know that one of the fundamental keystone habits of professional athletes is that they regularly do what we call self-care, or taking care of their muscle and their joint health. Yeah, so if we were to rewind kind of my life story, that kind of led me to down the path of being a sports medicine practitioner. I actually grew up in a really small town in Washington State. Pretty much all my family was either loggers, farmers, or just people that worked really hard with their bodies. And what I particularly saw in my grandfather, who's someone who really influenced me, is that by the time he was in his mid-60s, his body was so beat up that it would take him like 10 seconds just to be able to stand up straight when he would get out of his chair at the end of the day. And his quality of life was very much influenced by his ability to move well and by pain. And so he basically stopped living because of the pain that he experienced on a regular basis. And so about 4 years ago, I was kind of reflecting on all these concepts of what we were doing for athletes, and then thinking back to my family members, and I'm like, man, there's got to be a different way to approach what we call movement health in the workforce, especially those in the manual workforce. And right about that time, I was working with several executives in my clinic at an energy company, and they approached me about developing an injury prevention program for their field workers. And so essentially what we decided to do is bring all these concepts that we use in sports injury to the workplace and created a program for that group. And I can dive into that a little bit deeper here in a second.
So let me ask you just a couple of things real quick. As you take this approach, and you said that you were dealing with athletes, and all of a sudden now they're asking you to develop a program to bring into an organization, how are you able to, I guess, compare the two for it to actually work from, I guess, from the sports side, to all of a sudden now you're going into an organization, which we didn't go into a lot of description of what exactly they're wanting you to look at in that particular organization, and how do you get it to work from the athlete mode to all of a sudden now an organization is using it, and how does that kind of translate over?
Yeah, of course. So one of the facts is that we all have human bodies, whether you're a professional athlete or you're, you know, a manual laborer, and our bodies break down and function very similarly, whatever camp you're in. And so one of the things that we know is that athletes on a regular basis, they do specific things to take care of their muscle and joint health. In the working world, we don't do much body maintenance. You know, a lot of us take better care of our tools, our vehicles, than we do our own bodies. And oftentimes we don't start to do preventative actions in terms of like helping our muscles function better, or our joints function better, until it becomes a problem and is either an injury or it's something like we need a cortisone injection or a hip replacement or something like that. And so there are a couple ways that we can take principles from sports medicine and apply that to the working world. One of the things that we did with that group when we first started the company in 2015 is we took them all, so 1,000 of their employees, to what's called the functional movement assessment. And so that's kind of the gold standard of movement assessment in the athletic world. And so it's 7 baseline movements. And what you can do from that evaluation is you can look at basically every joint of the body to find out what areas are not moving well. Because we know that if one area in what we call the kinetic chain, so that's the series of joints, say the ankle, the knee, the hip, all the way up into the spine, if any one of those joints is not functioning the way that it's supposed to, it places stress above or below that area. So if I have limited hip mobility, I can't lift it or turn it out to the side the way that it's supposed to move, I'm going to most likely compensate and try to find motion in other areas of my body. And so usually I'm going to over-rotate with my lower back. I'm going to put more stress and strain on my lower back. And then what happens is it causes that increased wear and tear of the tissues. And then all it takes is bending down to pick something small up off the floor, you herniate a disc, and then it turns into, you know, a very complex work-related injury. So really that preventative piece, looking at how somebody moves, identifying where those areas need to be addressed from a movement perspective, and then giving people and empowering them with the tools and the education to improve those areas before it becomes a problem.
So when you start doing this, and all of a sudden now you're saying, okay, you have a human body, and of course there's a comparisons there from an athlete to now you're doing it in the work environment. And as you go through your website at vimocity.com, it has a couple different references there, and it talks about your predictive analysis, your leadership training, your live education, your online training and support. When you go into an organization and they're saying, okay, we're seeing these kind of injuries, how do you start using that data to make these predictive analysis on what they're going to potentially run into going forward?
Yeah, so one of the big things that we do is we dig into their historical injury data. So usually we like to look at between 5 and 10 years of the injury data, so we can look at the different types of injuries. So that could be the mechanism of the injury. It could be the body part that was affected. The type of injury, was it a sprain, strain? Was it a fracture, cut, laceration? And then we can start to just get a landscape of what that injury profile looks for that company. The next thing that we do is we go on site and we actually watch the industrial athletes perform their job tasks, and that gives us a really good perspective in terms of what the demands are for those individuals on a daily basis. And they usually provide us a lot of information in terms of, you know, things that they find put strain on their body. And so then we can, again, start to develop a preventative program. The third part is where we actually empower the ambassadors or leaders within the company to really help us promote some of the principles that we're trying to implement and the program that we're trying to implement. And then the next step is to actually educate each one of the employees or the members of the workforce. Number one, on how their body works. Most people have no idea how their body works and what they should do to maintain their movement health. You know, we've all been taught how to brush and floss our teeth, but most people don't even know where to start when it comes to muscle and joint health. So we give them those fundamental educational, that educational component, and then we perform that functional movement assessment. And so when we start to gather all that information, then what we can do is we can have a really good understanding of what areas we need to focus on in terms of like future education, any intervention or training that we need to do with specific groups that might be more prone to developing an injury. A really great example is we're working with a utility company, and a lot of their gas workers had been experiencing injuries related to wrenching. But then when you looked at their injury data, they didn't have many elbow and shoulder injuries, which you'd usually associate with wrenching. They had a lot of lower back injuries. When we dug a little bit deeper, what we found is that when we talked to the workforce, is they're incredibly stiff and sore after sitting in their vehicles for an extended period of time to go to the job. They'd get out and then they'd perform the task. Their body wasn't ready to perform that task, wasn't warmed up properly, and so then the action of wrenching placed extra stress on their lower back, caused lower back injuries. But we wouldn't have understood that wrenching and lower back injuries were connected to the sitting that happened leading up to the injury, and wouldn't have been able to develop an effective preventative strategy for them if we didn't have all those components of the equation.
Well, you actually covered quite a bit in that answer, so we're probably going to have to go back and probably really try to break some of it down. So I apologize, I'm backtracking a little bit. But I want to understand this. So when you go in and you're doing the predictive analysis and you're looking at the injuries that they've had for the last 5 to 10 years, are you looking essentially at their loss runs, or are you looking at their workers' comp claims, or exactly what are you looking at when you go in there?
Yeah, so when we go in, we're looking at the workers' comp claims, and some of those may contribute to the DART rates, so the days away, restricted days. It might just be their overall injuries that they recorded, but didn't necessarily lead to a DART injury. So we're looking at their comprehensive injury data for that time period.
And then when you start going in and you start having the conversation and training the leadership, what does that look like? So if I'm somebody who's interested in bringing your company on Vimocity, how do you have that conversation at first, opposed to if we've already contracted you, but you're giving us the information of what the leadership, you know, just ballpark on what the leadership training looks like?
Yeah, so it's kind of like a train the trainer type training, where we come in and we first educate each one of those ambassadors or people who are going to be leading the program at their particular location, just giving them the back information of what we're going to be sharing with their actual team members. We're going to go over some of the historical injury data, because a lot of those people have no idea what the historical trends are or what job tasks are creating those injuries. So we try to give them the full scope of that picture, get them implemented and started with the program ahead of time, so that by the time we roll the program out to the rest of the team members, they've already been implementing some of these the program on a daily basis, and they can speak to the benefits that they've experienced.
And then when you start doing the assessment, where you're there and you're looking at the workers, and you said sometimes you get a lot more information than what you kind of really bargained for from the actual team members, what exactly do they tell you? Do they kind of tell you, like, we're told to perform in this particular matter, or our process and procedure says X, but we've discovered that this is a better method going this other way? Or normally, how do those conversations go?
Yeah, we try not to dig too deep and let them perform the task the way that they would normally do it. And we'll ask very specific questions, and then just let them expand on those questions. But a lot of what we find, we oftentimes will do a job shadow with somebody who's newer to the company, and then somebody who's been with the company for 20, 30 years. And what we oftentimes find is that there are some best practices that more veteran employee have adopted over the years and little tricks that they've learned that really haven't been passed down to some of the newer members of the workforce. And so we find that kind of seeing the different perspectives there and how people are performing those tasks has been a great way for us to be able to idea share on improved ways that people can perform those tasks. And we definitely bring our expertise of biomechanical analysis and ergonomics to the equation, but we do find that we learn a lot from the employees.
And then you referenced something else earlier where you were talking about you had a lot of one particular company had a lot of injuries, and it was dealing with the amount of time that it took to travel from where they started to where the actual work was being performed. So based on that, are you recommending some kind of, I guess, pre-job warm-up is almost what it sounded like, or was I kind of understanding that incorrectly?
No, exactly. And it doesn't take much. I mean, it could just be like 1 or 2 minutes, but you know, when we sit, that's the most unnatural position for our body to be in. And so certain muscles tend to get tight, other muscles tend to kind of get shut down or not function as well as they're supposed to. Places increase stress on the discs of our spine and the joints of our spine. And so, you know, just as a field goal kicker, he wouldn't come straight off the bench and jump into the game. He'd perform a series of just real basic moves to prepare his body for activity. We try to have the workforce just implement like 1 or 2 quick things that, like I said, only take about 30 seconds to a minute to prepare their body and transition from the sitting to actually performing the job task.
Because you know automatically when you start talking to people and you start saying, hey, we're going to do some kind of warm-ups, automatically people that don't like to exercise, and I'm saying just for an example, they're going to default to, is this going to be P90X or Insanity or something along those lines? And I say that jokingly, but that's sometimes what people kind of analyze. So you're saying that it's a 1 to 2 minute warm-up scenario depending on what kind of work they're doing.
Yeah, that's been one of the things that we've really tried to differentiate with this whole process, is we aren't promoting exercise necessarily to these people, because exercise can be kind of a scary word, or it can be something that puts people off. And so really we're focused on what we call mobility. It's just your joints being able to move well and function the way that they're supposed to, or at least as well as they can. And I think when people kind of understand the difference between exercise and movement quality, when people move well, they have less pain and they just feel better in general. And most people like to feel better. And so I think that we've been able to knock down a lot of barriers for people just by talking about mobility and movement health as opposed to exercise.
You're listening to Kevin Rindle from Vimocity here on Safety FM. Now, just another question for you. Let's talk about real quick about office workers. And I know that you said earlier that one of the most, I guess, uncomfortable positions are kind of not a position that your body should normally be in, is sitting for a long period of time. So would you say for office workers, it's a good idea to do the standing decks that's becoming more and more popular as of late?
Yeah, I think that that's a great tool. It's not the end all be all. And there's some emerging research that shows that if you stand all day, there are actually some negative health consequences to that, like varicose veins, other things associated with just increased stress to your body. So I never advocate for somebody 100% going to standing, but I think that having the ability to vary your position is really important. So typically I recommend if somebody has a sit to stand desk, stand about 50% of the day, sit about 50% of the day, and maybe even have a couple different options for sitting, like a traditional chair, maybe a perching stool, or like an exercise ball, something like that.
Okay, because I know that depending on what kind of environment you are in, and some offices don't even allow the yoga ball or the exercise ball because of injuries that had occurred previously, and it just really depends on what kind of organization that you're in. So I'm not saying that it's good or bad or indifferent. I know that I worked for a particular company that they said that you had to have the holder for the actual exercise ball. They called it a yoga ball. I don't know why they called it a yoga ball, but for it to actually be in place, and that would be the only way that they were allowed to use it. I guess that was just their particular preference. So when you go into a company and you start having conversations about implementing the plans that Vimocity can actually do for an organization, normally I know the question has to come about in regards of return on investment. So when you're talking to some of the upper management and the leaders, what does that conversation normally look like?
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons why we like to really dig into that injury data right from the get-go, and we like to play an active role in solving some of these issues that they're having beyond just implementing a stretch and flex program, because we're not just a stretch and flex program. And so the numbers really do speak for themselves. After, you know, implementing this program with a couple of our clients for going on 5 years now, we have a lot of data that shows that trend of not only reduced number of injuries, but reduced number of days away and restricted days. And then we can look at actual workers' comp claims. And so it's pretty objective to be able to look at the results from those programs. And beyond that, what we consistently hear is that the feedback is always so positive. I mean, when people, again, are not in pain and they feel better and they feel like they're empowered to, you know, play an active role in getting up and moving and doing positive things for their body, they just have a better attitude. And so I've had several executives tell me, you know, it's great that we've saved a lot of money with this program. It's more than paid for itself. But the increase in morale and the fact that our employees know that we care about them and we're wanting to invest in them, that carries a lot of weight too. So I think there are a lot of components to the ROI that are difficult to calculate, but are definitely seen from the impact that it has on the morale and the culture of the organization.
Yeah, I'm sure that the morale has to play a big factor, especially when they're seeing, hey, somebody's actually coming in, taking a look and really caring about us as individuals, as a team, as an organization. So it has to really make them feel well in that particular regards. Now, when you first come in, you do the assessment, how often do you come back in to kind of like reevaluate what's going on? Is that kind of a frequency thing, or is it just kind of based on organization to organization?
Yeah, it's based on organization. Typically when we first implement the program with an organization, we do an initial assessment, the functional movement assessment. And then we come back after about 8 to 10 weeks after the organization has been on the program. We come back and we retest, because we can, you know, make some objective decisions in terms of like, are these people seeing improvement? Is there improvement in, you know, the quality of movement and how people are responding to the whatever we have implemented with them from a program perspective. Usually we just do that in the first year, and then in follow-up years, maybe we'll take a subset. We oftentimes look at kind of the higher risk groups, and we'll go back and we'll retest them. But oftentimes if we're limited to a certain budget, we try to implement some additional education where we focus more than on the ergonomics, the job task, performance, and kind of building off of the foundation of the year one program. So that functional movement screen is usually just a first year emphasis. What we have found is that usually after we've been working with the field-based workers for 1 to 2 years, oftentimes they'll then implement it to the desk-based workers or the office-based workers if the organization has both office and field.
Kevin, if people want to know more about Vimocity, what do they need to do?
Yeah, they can just go to vimocity.com, which is vimocity.com, or I can be reached at kevin@vimocity.com.
Kevin, I appreciate you coming on today, and thanks for being on here on Safety FM.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
SafetyFM.com.